Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Okay, everybody, I hope you're sitting down and tuning in. He's here, everyone. He's here. Dr. Chris Pockel is here, veterinarian and board certified veterinary behaviorist. How are you, my friend?
I am doing so well, Dr. Christman. Thank you for having me on. This is going to be so much fun today.
It is going to be so much fun. I think I booked this appointment about 5 years ago to have you. So.
It kind of feels like that right now, doesn't it? It totally feels that way.
So Dr. Pockel received his veterinary degree from the University of Minnesota, and he is the owner of Animal Behavior Clinic in Portland, Oregon. And you have the list goes on to everyone that is tuning in. You can follow him at animalbehaviorclinic.net, follow him on Instagram. He does a lot of great work with us here at DVM 360. He's on our advisory board. We utilize him for his expertise, and we're going to be utilizing him today to chat with him about very common concerns that our listeners have. Like, as an example, Dr. Pockel, triaging recommendations for clients when you know that they're in that state of being overwhelmed and their pet needs maybe something different effort from them. Like, you know, where do you find that line, or what are some recommendations that veterinarians can kind of help segue that in?
Yeah, I think the state of overwhelm right now is real. Right, for everyone, both within the veterinary profession as well as for, just about everybody that I speak to as clients and friends and colleagues, everybody is navigating stuff that's still unfamiliar because it's constantly changing. And so the thought of adding in more, even if we're motivated to do so. So let's say you've got that, that barking dog for whatever reason, whether it's separation anxiety or nuisance barking, responding to the mailman, whatever the case may be, or whether you've got that, cat who's waking people up at night, regardless of where people are at, people are venting. They're saying, oh my gosh, like, I just need it to be better. So then you're stuck as the practitioner saying, well, gosh, I don't know how to help you. I don't have the time to devote, an hour and a half to do a comprehensive behavior evaluation. Gosh, you're telling me you're already strapped, so you can't do much. Like, where do you even start that process? That for me is such an important detail for us to be able to nail down, because I think, quite honestly, I can give you 300 different resources, right? But the average client doesn't have the time, the bandwidth, or necessarily even the comprehension to make sense of all of that information without some guidance. So for me, I think that the best place to start is to ask that client in front of you, if I could give you one or two pieces of advice today, what's actually going to be meaningful for you? Meaning, is it a referral to a trainer? Is it giving you, medication if we're worried about a fear or anxiety-based issue? Is it, helping you? Is it just listening and saying, yeah, I really hear the concern that you have and I understand how difficult that is. We'll need to devote some more time for that, but I do hear you and I understand your concern, right? So asking that client, what can I do in the time that we have available today that will be meaningful for you? And what I like about that is that it allows us to tap into truly what is going to be helpful for that client. And I'll also be honest here, I think a lot of clients don't even know. Right? Where they're like, God, I don't even know. I'm just so in the weeds right now, just struggling. Well, right. Okay. Well, that's actually a really important thing to navigate too, because quite honestly, if you don't know what you need, I don't really know how to give it to you. So yeah. Like just starting that conversation from a place of empathy, understanding, and saying, hey, if I gave you a website, would that be helpful? If I gave you a video to watch, would that be helpful? If I gave you a handout, would that be helpful? If I set you up with one of my technicians or a trainer that I know in the area to help guide you through some stuff, would that be helpful? Versus feeling like we're taking on that entire process to go through, 20, 30 minutes of discussion and dialogue and recommendations. Chances are neither you or the client has that time in that moment right now. So we got to triage it just like we do everything else.
And I truly think sometimes, this is me, the general practitioner speaking, is like, sometimes I feel like pet owners don't know the difference necessarily between a trainer, and they don't even know that you exist sometimes. I'm sure you must see that on your end too, like that there are veterinary board certified veterinary behaviorists that are available. Do you feel that too when you get referrals?
Yeah, it certainly happens. I think, you know, I'm grateful that I've been practicing here in the Portland area for, gosh, going on 11 years. I practiced in Minneapolis prior to that. And both of these cities have had veterinary behavior services going on, gosh, 25 years now. So I'm grateful that I'm practicing in areas of the country who have had exposure to that. But even still, we get those clients who are like, who are you and what do you do? And why would I need you versus someone else? So yeah, we still definitely navigate that on a regular basis for sure.
Yeah. And you know, we're living in a time where us humans are feeling very overwhelmed too. And, you know, that overwhelming feeling, I'm sure, is being trickled on to our pets, I'm sure. And I mean, I'm seeing it in practice too. So, I mean, what does that look like in terms of like that anxiety or that stress? That is that something that dogs and cats can feel off of us?
It depends, right? So it depends on the relationship. It depends on the environment. It depends on, you know, if you are really overwhelmed as a person, but you're still going to work every day, you know, that stress kind of goes out of the house for, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours of the day. So maybe that's going to be less evident to that dog as opposed to someone who's working from home and perhaps is trying to navigate homeschool for their children. And they're also stressed about, you know, health issues or financial concerns. You know, the overall social environment that animals live in definitely affects their ability to cope. Depending on the environment, it may affect their sleep-wake cycle as well. So now we may end up with sleep-deprived animals who are kind of accustomed to sleeping through the vast majority of the day because everybody went off to work and school. And now the household is buzzing, you know, for 14 hours at a time. In even just that can have an impact on stress, resilience, recovery, response patterns. All of those things are there. And the piece that I want to stress here too is that stress looks different for each animal. So we may have some animals that you really can't tell because they're handling things really well. In other cases, you may have animals that are showing more signs of irritability or hyperarousal. Others may show signs of avoidance behavior or sort of distancing themselves from social interaction as a way to buffer from stress. Others show a lot more pacing, panting, whining, you know, more overt signs truly that we might think of with fear or anxiety. So it varies a lot. And so when we're asking clients to say, hey, how's your pup doing? Asking about specific things is certainly a great way to start the conversation. But even saying, hey, are you noticing any differences from your pup's normal baseline? Is your cat showing any significant changes in their behavior that would suggest that we might need to take just a little bit closer look? That can help to identify some of those other things that clients may not be recognizing right on the surface.
Yeah, it's. I'm glad you mentioned that because every dog and cat is so different with what they show signs of. And, you know, so when you're recommending these kinds of changes to these animals, I mean, you know, change has got to be scary, I'm sure. And in terms of like the pet parent too, what does that look like on their end too? Like, are there ways for clients to modify their pet's behavior that don't require like devoting large chunks of time every day to dedicated training sessions?
There absolutely are. And this is one of the things that's so important to remember is that we are all learning, right? Every moment of every day, our brain is processing sensory and social information. And we're basically saying, hey, did that work? Did that lead to a positive outcome, to a negative outcome? If it was positive, I think it was positive. Cool. I'm going to do more of that again tomorrow. If that led to something unpleasant, I'm probably going to do less of whatever that thing was. So that sort of tallying, if you will, or kind of the check marks of, you know, do more, do less. That is something that happens, yes, within dedicated training sessions, but it happens during every single interaction that we have with our animals. So if you're someone who's really strapped for time and you don't have the ability to say, hey, I'm going to carve out 15 minutes to work on this specific exercise, is it possible to be even just a little bit more mindful of the feedback that we're giving to the animals that share our homes? So that if I'm, let's say, running late for work and I'm rushing through the house to try to get out and in a hurry, and I'm scrambling and my dog is over in the corner with this wide-eyed, tail-down expression because they're overwhelmed by the energy that I'm putting out to the world, is it possible even just to pause for a brief moment, take a breath, and move more with intention so I'm not freaking my dog out? That's meaningful, right? It allows for more trust and comfort within that relationship, but it didn't necessarily take, quote unquote, more time. It was just being more intentional and more aware of the relationship and the conversation that's happening back and forth. You know, that's one way to do it. Another way is, you know, if we say, gosh, you know, my dog is constantly bouncing off the walls, how could I give them some feedback? Gosh, you know, even starting by every time your dog offers a sit or lays down on their bed, if I said, oh my gosh, you are just a handsome devil, thank you. Oh my gosh, you are so good. And just giving that little bit of reinforcement for the things that we like in the moment, guess what? It builds on itself. Then it doesn't take a lot more time. It's just, again, being more intentional as best we can.
And are there any resources then for the, you know, because we're so busy sometimes too, for the overwhelmed pet owners to work through some of these behavior change plans with their pets?
There certainly are, you know, and this comes back to that question of asking, you know, what's actually going to be helpful for you? Meaning, if I gave you one or two specific exercises that may have a really big impact, maybe that's going to work for that one client where they're not thinking about doing a 37-step change plan. In other cases, it may be a matter of giving them a structured course to work their way through something that's self-paced. For example, one of the companies that I'm involved with, Instinct Dog Behavior and Training, has some really nice online courses working with leash reactivity, kids and dogs, enrichment, as well as a patient and polite course. You know, those are available for clients to log into. It's available for them to work through at their own pace. So maybe that's the right option. And we also have other services that, you know, within our communities where, you know, it may be a matter of saying, you know what, I just need my dog to get some exercise. So I'm going to hire a dog walker to come in 3 days a week. I don't have the time for it, but I've got the resources and the financial resources to do that. Cool. Maybe this is a win-win. I can get my dog out of the house, get them some exercise. Maybe it's going away for some training time, you know, with that trainer utilizing positive reinforcement techniques to really build, you know, individual skills. And it may be a matter of, you know, having a trainer or a behavior consultant work with that dog to onboard whatever those skills are to then make it easier for the pet parent to really then practice and maintain those skills versus being the one to have to onboard them. So there's lots of different ways that we can do that depending on the circumstances, depending on the budget, depending on the availability of those individuals in the community.
You know, it got me thinking when you're just thinking of that. I say to a lot of the pet owners about like proactive behavior management versus reactive behavior management. And I think you and I are on the same page about that too. Why don't you tell the listeners about like, what does proactive management mean?
Yeah, so one of the greatest examples that I use, since a lot of my pet parents are also parents, right? So, you know, and that's sort of just the nature of my caseload. You know, I say, you know, guess what? If I were walking down the street with a toddler and I'm, you know, walking alongside the shoulder of a busy highway or a busy street, I wouldn't necessarily just allow my toddler to roam freely in hopes that they stayed out of the street, right? I would have something in place, whether I'm holding their hand, whether I'm holding on to them, whether I have them in a stroller, so that they can't get themselves into trouble or put themselves into an unsafe situation. That to me is an example of proactive management. I'm thinking ahead about the situation that I'm putting that child into, so that I'm heading off any particular dangers before they have a chance to happen. In that same example, reactive management would be kind of standing back and saying, you know, do what you want. And then as the child starts to run into the street, I go, no, stop, get back over here. Yeah. Or I might even be tempted to give some sort of a no or a verbal correction. Well, those two things function very differently, right? And so, you know, our pets, dogs or cats, have a lot of the same needs. They actually respond so much better to an environment that is structured to keep them, quote unquote, out of the busy street versus letting them get themselves into trouble and then stepping in with a reprimand of some sort. And that might be things like, you know, if we know somebody is coming to the front door, I know that I'm expecting a package delivery at 4 o'clock because Amazon gave me the notice. It's four stops away, right? Yeah. I know they're coming. So does that mean, you know, taking the dog for a walk? Does that mean putting the dog on leash and getting ready to reward them for laying down quietly when the doorbell rings? You know, that more of that proactive, what do I want this animal to do in this circumstance versus trying to multitask and do all of the other things. And then I'm having to jump in kind of as damage control after the fact. It's just not as effective. And it's not, in most cases, it's not effectively changing behavior patterns over time. So that proactive management sets the stage for our animals to do the things that we want them to do. It makes it so much easier for us to then reinforce or reward the behaviors we like. And now we're actually getting momentum that makes life easier for everyone. Not saying that it's easy, but it's actually super important, not only from a safety standpoint, but also to set that stage for lasting behavior change.
It's not easy. It's like when I get the UPS package that comes to the door, you would think that I have four enormous, like Great Dane pit bulls, but they're dachshunds that are coming to the door. And it's so funny. I am going to try to steal that idea because I do know when they're coming. You're right. And like, part of it is just unbeknownst to me that I could do some of those kinds of behaviors, like positive behaviors, and let them know and be more proactive than letting them just act like lunatics when the package arrived.
Exactly right. And I've seen photos of your dachshunds all cuddled up and all snuggling in space. So what if we taught them that the sound of the doorbell is a cue that means run over to the cuddle mat because you're all going to get a little treat over there. Like we can do that even in real time by putting those two things together. You hear the sound of the doorbells? Puppy, 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 puppy. All over here, guys. Treat, 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 treat. Boom. Now we're starting that process of, hey, instead of that, do this.
I'm stealing this. This is brilliant. I love it. And get ready. I'm going to share you the video too, to show you.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. You know, that's actually a really important thing there, Adam, is finding a way to make it doable, right? Yes. Some clients might've heard that recommendation. Some veterinarians hear that recommendation. They're like, gosh, that's just not accessible to me. I get it. I totally get it. But what is accessible to you, even in the state of overwhelm? What are those little moments where you can give that animal or you can guide that client through giving that animal just a little bit of different feedback? Bop, bop, bop. Instead of do that, hey, let's try this instead. What can we do to really shift those behavior patterns? That's what we're trying to accomplish without getting ourselves stuck where we're then saying, gosh, now I have to use a correction. Now I have to use a pinch collar. Now I'm tempted to reach for the shock collar. There are so many better ways that actually give sort of agency to the learner in a way that allows us to do this. Those punitive methods really are a last resort in most cases. It's not that they can't work, but they really should not be a go-to for anyone in the veterinary community listening to this call.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. Really, really good pieces of advice. Dr. Paco, where can we find more information about you and Animal Behavior Clinic, all that stuff?
Yeah, the easiest place to track me down is you can certainly find me on social media. By all means, follow me on Instagram, send me a friend request along with a message on Facebook. Introduce yourself if you're reaching out that way. But really looking at drpachel.com. So that's drpachel.com. You can find direct links there to other podcasts, to videos, to articles that I've written, lectures that I've recorded that are available for viewing or for purchase. As well as direct links then to the Animal Behavior Clinic, as well as just about every project that I'm involved in. So drpachel.com is a great place to go, as well as animalbehaviorclinic.net.
Well said, my friend. Thank you so much for being on. We're so honored to have you on the podcast, and thank you for all your work in our profession. You really are phenomenal.
Well, thank you for providing a platform and an opportunity and for all that you're doing, not only in the general practice side of things, but gosh, getting content like this out to the veterinary community. Could not be more grateful. Thank you. Well,
thank you so much. My honor. Dr. Paco, everyone, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman.
Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.